Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
All of television history is contained within the Box of Delights.
It was happening in front of us.
Incredible.
In our living rooms. It was amazing.
Guests pick their favourite television moment.
And tell us why they love it.
And is this the episode where Daisy's just been for the interview at the Woman's Magazine?
Flaps.
That's it, Flaps.
Yeah.
Named one of Radio Times' best podcasts of the year.
I don't understand people who don't see the joy in drawing the curtains,
a mug of hot chocolate and something nice on TV. Like, what could be nicer than that?
Than having a snuggle.
Exactly.
Nostalgia in bite-sized chunks.
Box of Delights
from Great Big Owl.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello, I'm John Holmes. It's the One Show Show, the podcast that climbs into bed with TV's The One Show and does a shit, just like, off the top of my head, an actress in a relationship with Johnny Depp. I am John Holmes, and this is part two of this week's episode, so if you'd like to go back and listen to part one first so that any of the following makes any kind of sense, we'll wait for you to do that now. Welcome back. Here's part two, and joining me, Mark Haynes and Taylor Parks.
Well, look, if we're talking about the two Alexes and their great on-screen chemistry, there's the opening exchange is amazing. Because it's the 3000th episode, Alex Jones feels she has to commemorate this in some way verbally. And she says, well, this show has changed so much over the years, which is true. It's like Love Me Do to Strawberry Fields in 4.5 years. Back at those faltering early episodes. But it's just really, it's just a setup for our opener, which is, it's the first big gag, basically, to get everyone on side, just warm up the audience a bit. She says, there's one thing that's remained a constant, this coffee table. And this seems to take Alex Scott slightly by surprise. I think, you know how Peter Cook used to deliberately hold back some lines from Dudley Moore until they were in front of the cameras so that you'd get a pure response. I think Alex Jones might be doing something a bit like that. So we get to see Alex Scott's improv skills here. Quick as a flash, she says, what? And why? And then she looks to camera and does a shrugging gesture and says, okay. Like, well, yeah, please, getting a little bit crazier. It's getting a little bit out of hand, and it's time to reel it in a bit before it descends into total anarchy. And then they talk over each other for a second.
You know, Al, the show has changed so much over the years. You know, we've had different studios, different presenters, but the one thing that's remained a constant...
What's that?
This coffee table.
What? And
it's
why?
It survived the whole thing.
Okay,
no
single
plastic here.
And I'm sat here watching this, thinking... Her cleaner's doing better than I am. This is an opportunity to watch and learn for up-and-coming media professionals
like
us.
It was the table, the constant table, because we've talked about this before, they're very obsessed in the past with single-use plastic. 96% of their films that they show are about single-use plastic and people picking it up on beaches. But they're the glaring evidence of their... Well, they can never throw it away. That's why it's a constant, because the moment that huge plastic coffee table goes in a bin, that the One Show is a hypocrite. So yeah, they have to keep it there the whole time. And that's why, the only reason it's a constant... And it
You'll
has
see
been
it next on the beach at Filey with a swan wrapped around it.
I did like the fact that because this was the 3000th episode, they decided that the best way to launch it would be with a fitting tribute, which was to not be able to even blow a party horn particularly well.
Mine just didn't nearly work, but we got it there. Hello and welcome to the 3000 edition of The One Show with Alex Jones.
And Alex Scott, is a party for two, everybody.
I thought it was a really limp start to what was, let's face it, a celebration in everything but execution. They said it was a party. After 30 seconds of that opening thing, it was never referenced again. It was a bit like if you'd sort of, if it's your mum's birthday, you'd say to her, "Mum, happy birthday for your treat. We're going to act like this is just a normal day and we're not going to mention your birthday again." When you have something like a 3,000th episode and you spend your time saying we're 3,000 episodes, the most obvious thing to do is you go and let's see some of the great highlights from over those 3,000 episodes.
Yes.
You can't just say this is a special episode and then make it an ordinary run-of-the-mill thing. You have to choose one or the other.
You could have absolutely filled... It's not like anything else they had on the programme was desperately needed to be broadcast. You could have just done half an hour of highlight. Well, you might not have got half an hour out of it, but 3,000 episodes, you might have got 4 minutes of highlights.
I had a little look. So we've never actually gone into looking at how the One Show started at all. I know we've talked about this, some of the people, I think Jane Garvey was talking about a little bit about the early days when she was obviously, you know, involved. And I had a look. It was commissioned for a 4-week trial run in 2006.
Yeah.
So it's been going for 14 years now. The initial presenting team was Adrian Childs and Nadia Sawala. And again, both of them are around. Why don't you go 3,000 episodes? Let's welcome back the hosts from the first one. It's Adrian Childs and Nadia Sawala. It's so easy to do.
Let's welcome back Hardeep Singh Kohli, one of the early roving reporters.
Well, that's what he was. So when they started the full series, it was Adrian Childs as the presenter. Hardeep Singh Kohli was the head roving reporter. Roving. And Nadia Sawala was ultimately replaced by Mylene Klass. I have no recollection of the Klass years at all. No. And then Klass went off to give birth to her first child and was replaced by Christine Bleakley. What they look back on now as the golden years, but at the time,
the ones,
didn't really seem like golden years.
There was a great Alex Scott moment when she was introducing Simon Pegg, who was on this, which I thought they were going to just ignore, but they did have a callback of it when she said, "And we've got Mission Impossible's Sean Pegg on the programme."
Yeah, and we've got Mission Impossible, Sean Pegg and W1H Jessica Hines, who, of course, created the classic comedy Space together.
Wonderfully referenced later on by Simon Pegg calling her Alan.
"Good evening, Sean."
"Good evening, Alan. So nice to be here."
So they did keep it as a bit of a running joke. So that was... You know, they got out of that all right.
It is bad. I mean, presumably that was written on the teleprompter as well. That's on your auto cue. Because she isn't going to make that thing of thinking it's Shaun of the Dead by looking at a word. That's only if you look at his face. So that is some researcher who has written the word Shaun in. And you know, I feel for him. She mentions, well, you know, I called him Shaun. She goes, "I've done it hundreds of times."
Good, buddy. I've done it tens of times. I mean, the number of times I've called Ross Kemp Grant is just embarrassing.
Just pull it back. Don't sort of go, "I'm useless at this." It's really easy when you meet actors to remember their names because they're usually famous. They showed him in a clip from a film he was in where he plays a man who's been kept in a cellar for 30 years. They had a funny thing where they went, "Oh, doesn't it look a bit like Bob Geldof in Lockdown," which referenced an old One Show. And again, Alex Scott had a little bit of trouble. So she said, "His phone must be pinging off because I was thinking of Shaun of the Dead." And I went back and I listened to it again and again. And I cannot work out what she was trying to get to there. It didn't work. It didn't make sense. But I can't see even the bit where it went wrong. And you go, "Oh, yeah, of course, she must have meant that." But, hey, look, I imagine you're going to hear it right now.
We'll meet our first guests now, one of whom could definitely use a lockdown haircut, if this photo is anything to go by. There's an air of Sir Bob Geldof in Lockdown about it, isn't there?
Well, look, you're saying Bob Geldof. His phone's most probably pinging off because I was thinking Shaun and the Dead. And obviously, yep, that is Simon Pegg in the new film Inheritance.
See, it doesn't make any fucking sense.
Oh, no, it
makes no fucking sense.
Because he so unprofessionally wouldn't switch his phone off while he was waiting to be called to go live on the One Show. The best bit of that interview is they've got a topless photo showing Sean Pegg's method acting for his film, where he plays a man who's been locked in a dungeon for 30 years. And there's him with his shirt off, looking like he's been dragged feet first out of a gulag. And they're both going, "Ooh, like, oh, how do you do that? What? Yeah, like, ooh, that's impressive. Like, you know, like, look at his great physique," until he has to kind of slightly awkwardly explain that it's meant to make him look like a man who's been locked in a dungeon for 30 years.
You kind of did a bit of method acting on this because you were supposed to be a man who'd been in captivity for 30 years. And gosh, you went for it. We've got a picture of you just before you started on the role. My goodness. Simon, how did you manage that?
I just had to do a lot of cardio every day. I ran 10K every day for 3 months. And I just put out a lot more than I put in. And that's eventually what happens. It's not sustainable. I don't advise it as a way of, dropping weight. I was supposed to look like I'd been held captive for 30 years.
And I thought this is something about modern manners, right? Like, you have to compliment everybody on their body unless they eat well and exercise regularly, in which case you shouldn't say anything nice about them because it might give someone a complex. Whereas this guy who's been like eating 1 gram of carbohydrates for the last 6 months, you know, on a treadmill for 9 hours a day. Oh, it looks really good. You know that bit where like just under your rib where there's like a flap of skin that should be attached to something?
They threw a little bit where I think Simon Pegg tried to, and this is because I don't know what this means, but Simon Pegg just went, it was 6% body fat, and everyone went, oh my, you know, geez. And I was thinking, is that low or high? I don't know.
But I got down to about 6% body fat, and my wife cried.
6%?
She likes me with a little bit of meat, you know.
But you must have put a bit of timber on now in lockdown. I mean, haven't we all?
But it's just a world, of course, where you understand percentages of body fat.
The thing is, before we stray too far from Alex Jones and Alex Scott blowing party favours in ostentatiously opposite directions, to show, because they're social distancing, they don't want to exchange filthy, diseased air, you know, with their puffing and panting. It was the first thing you saw, and it just underlined how weird the One Show is existing. I mean, you're always aware of this meticulous artifice and the unreality of a programme like this. But, you know, when you have it at a time when humanity is quivering like a ladybird in the spreading shadow of a descending training shoe, that painted on weirdness looks weirder than ever. All these unreal sofas and play-acted small talk, you know, with everything lit like an autopsy in full HD. So if you're over 35, you have to wear 4 inches of makeup, and even then your neck looks like a hamstring. It's hard to pretend at a time like this, right? So, like, for a start, it's hard to pretend that you can make a TV show with everyone 2 meters apart and nobody touching anything that anybody else has touched. No, it's not. There's somebody's taking chances somewhere, right? So stop pretending. It's like they're sat in the ruins of a bombed out building, drinking tea with their little fingers sticking out. You know what I mean? Like with a tattered Union Jack. It's just, no, but because it means that everyone has to be interviewed over Zoom, I get a little bit of nice schadenfreude out of that. Right. I like the technical and social added awkwardness of it. Right. Let them taste that bitterness and experience that chill. Right. It makes the One Show a purer experience, closer to its essence. And it drags TV down to the level of podcasting, where you get up, have some toast, sit down at the computer and have to start performing, like with the buttery plate still next to you in a room that you never leave. You know, it's like, but the imaginary red light comes on and you're sat there staring across the room into your own unmade bed, and it's time to work up some effortless comic chemistry with the disembodied voice of a total stranger. I'm fine with that. I like to see it. I only wish I could see. They should have to have the full experience. They should have to go out and meet their friends, and their friends say, oh, what have you been doing lately? And instead of saying, oh, I'm hosting the BBC's flagship magazine programme, they'll go, I'm on a podcast. And then their friends go, oh, really? So's my window cleaner. Does it pay well? And they go, it's not one of those sneery peanut gallery ones, is it? We like to think it's a little bit different.
Heavy Pencil.
An actor of my experience, you just get wrung dry.
A podcast sitcom with Anna Crilly and Tony Gardner.
I played Edmund Gelder, and he played Fanny Snatch.
The Observer called it
a lovely thing, wonderfully funny, pitched perfectly, produced with a light touch.
I'm not having any more of this. I need you to pull me off immediately.
Heavy Pencil from Great Big Owl.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I loved the little line in there as well, which is just they find it very difficult to compliment people because I think a lot of the time when they have comedians in especially, they haven't really followed their work. And there was a little bit, I think, where Alex was talking about Spaced and she said, it's a comedy. Now, it's a cult comedy.
Well, for those few who haven't seen it, I mean, it's a comedy, and now a cult comedy.
And I thought, that is not an upward move. That is very much a downward slide. It's gone from being a comedy to a cult comedy. This is a disaster, because after cult comedy is failed comedy.
Yeah. There was a nice nod for the writer of Jessica Hines' new sitcom. Is it a sitcom? Is it a drama? I wasn't quite sure.
Comedy drama.
Something comedy drama, of course it is. Something with David Tennant and Jessica Hines, but the writer Sean Pye, who we know, I'm sure, but he, Sean Pye, was responsible for a joke that was...
Really? Because there was no evidence of this in the clip they showed us from Jessica Hines' new sitcom.
There certainly was not in the clip they showed. He was responsible for a joke in a writer's room that was obviously never going to make it to air, but it was one of those jokes that I have... it's rare you hear a writer's room do a sharp intake of breath. That doesn't happen. And it was one of those occasions where it did, and everyone knew it wasn't good. This was on the 11 o'clock show, if you remember that, back in the late 90s. And
yeah,
in the writer's
cult
room,
comedy.
Cult
comedy. So wait a minute, So there's someone sitting in the writer's room for the 11 o'clock show.
That's right.
I'm going to say something really mean-spirited and offensive.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and it was the one thing that didn't make it to air. But Sean Pye was responsible for that. So that's all my memory of Sean Pye is coming up with a joke, which I'm not even going to tell now. But if I ever see you in a pub, if you're listening to this, do ask me what Sean Pye's joke was, and I will happily tell you.
What will you do if people ask you to tell the Dame Vera Lynn story?
Well, I'll tell them that in the pub as well, but again, okay. not on here, I won't.
All right, listen, if we can cut this bit out. Right, yeah. Edit this bit out. Tell me the joke now,
of course,
and I'll tell you my unusable joke that if I ever did a stand-up set, I'd want to start with and empty
Perfect.
The room.
Perfect. All right, so it was the day that...
Well, apologies, but we're going to be cutting away from the One Show right now, but you can catch it over on BBC Two. Now, here on BBC One, highlights from day two of Wimbledon.
British winner. The emotions overcome him. Oh, that's brilliant. Oh, yes.
That is perfect.
Irresistible, majestic, in a class of her own. Wimbledon champion again.
Did we see Alex Jones' attempt at a prank call?
Oh, that didn't work. I don't understand the element of prank. There was no element of prank there. There was also no element of surprise. It was
a barely
feature.
A call.
It was barely a call. It was absolutely perplexing as to what it is. Some of the decisions made on this show are so strange that I'm almost beginning to think there's nobody there. That it's just somehow, I don't know, words are appearing on a page and people are just going, yeah, we'll do that. And nobody knows where they're coming from.
Yeah, it was about food banks, wasn't it? It was about the good that people had done during lockdown. another food bank lockdown film. We've had plenty of them.
This in the middle of the 3,000th episode party spectacular.
Of course.
Big earnest bit about fucking food banks.
And Alex phoned a woman. I still don't really know what happened. She said, I'm going to phone a woman who's been very good with helping people out with a food bank. And I'm going to phone her off air, just under the pretext of getting research information for the interview, to tell her that she's going to be on the show tonight.
I'm about to give Liz a call and pretend, you know, that I'd like to know more about her project before she appears on the show tonight, potentially. But what she doesn't know is I already know everything about it, and we've got a bit of a surprise for her.
So she said to her, so she's obviously sitting in the green room, and you know, it's Alex from The One Show. Could you tell me a little bit about what you've achieved? And the woman started saying, well, yeah, what I've done is I've helped people. And Alex went, I know all this already. I know it all. I know, you don't have to tell us. So we didn't really find out.
No, that was the worst part of it, wasn't it? That they were so keen to do their practical joke that they basically said to the woman, shut up, we're doing a fucking bit. We're doing a bit now.
Oh, hiya Liz, hiya. Popper Pantry, can you tell me a bit about it?
We go out into the local community, different venues, and we hand out bags of food.
But you know what, Liz? I already know all about your service.
Yeah.
It was really strange.
All we got to see of this woman was at the beginning, her Tinder picture, which is like a glam black and white shot of her about 8 years ago. It didn't look anything like her. Yes. And then what was set up as a celebration of good eggs running food banks, carefully phrased to disguise the glaring honking incongruity of the existence of food banks in the 21st
century. State propaganda.
Which we got this sort of surprise thing where I think the idea was she would have been in the studio and they'd have said, and here's so and so who you gave food to, and here's, and they all come in, and the presence of all these people right there going, oh, thank you Liz, would have reduced her to tears and could have zoomed in on that. It doesn't really work as a Zoom montage, does it? It's like, you remember the person? Look at this picture of this person. You remember them? Yes. What about this one? Yep. Well, they say, they already said thank you when I gave them a box of cornflakes and two tins of sweet corn. Oh, all right.
You've helped so many people in Tamworth. Thank you so much. You're a wonderful friend.
We followed your journey right from the start. You're a credit to the community of Tamworth.
The thing this reminded me of is last week they showed a clip of the That's Life segment they did with Nicholas Winton, the guy who had saved a lot of children during the Holocaust, where Esther Ranson basically said, if there's anyone in this audience who owes their life to Sir Nicholas Winton, will they please stand up? And the entire five rows behind Nicholas Winton stand up. And you can see them going, that was good, wasn't it? Why don't we do it with the food bank woman? Why don't we Sir Nicholas Winton, the food bank woman? But of course, over Zoom, it's just, you know, you're watching them. But I think that was their attempt to do a big heartbreaking moment where you're absolutely right, she'd break down in tears. And then the greatest twist of all, what happens when the prankster becomes the pranked? So they do the exact same thing to Alex, and they say, Alex, you'll never guess who we've got here. You haven't seen your mum for 2 weeks. And even though Alex knows about all the social distancing stuff, she genuinely thought her mum was going to be in the studio because that would make it work as a prank. Wrong. It's just a Zoom call, like she probably does every night. And you could see her go from being emotionally moved to just going, all right, yeah, great. Absolutely.
My mum on a screen. I've seen my mum on a screen really regularly during this. Why are you showing my mum on a screen on the television? What's the point of that?
Yeah, and as well as food banks, we do love it when you guys at home get in touch. And because travel restrictions have been lifted in Wales very soon. Yeah. And we've had a message come in right now. A message from Mary, who's from somewhere near Swansea, who says she can't wait to see her daughter, who she hasn't seen in 16 weeks. In fact, she can't wait any longer. And here she is, actually.
No!
Oh my gosh! It is, Alex. It is your mum who you haven't seen.
Hiya, Mum.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, Alex is about to have 2 weeks off, as she is now, to go and see her mum, because she can. So she's with her anyway. So it's absolutely pointless.
Oh, it's only going to be... It's only... How many days now? Five?
It's been 4 very long months.
It has. Yeah. Oh, gosh.
She also mentioned, oh, my mum's not very emotional. She always holds it together. Well, even if this had gone ahead, it doesn't sound like it would have been very tear-jerking.
You've got to get me going, and this is your surprise. Got it together.
What a waste of everyone's time. But at least it got us out of the food bank bit that was a bit of a downer.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you compare that food bank bit to the Nicholas Winton thing you're talking about. It's like comparing a frozen pea to Halley's Comet. Somebody really did think that's exactly what came to my mind as well.
There was a funny bit of Alex Scott talking to Alex Jones and just doing, again, one of those emotional sort of farewells. You're going off for 2 weeks, and she said, during lockdown, you have worked hard to keep smiles on everyone's faces. And again, the one show is sort of like frontline entertaining the troops and everything. Nobody is watching this fucking thing. No one.
And we do have to let everyone know that, obviously, Al, you've been keeping us all entertained during the whole of lockdown, working so hard to keep smiles on everyone's faces. Oh. And you are going away for 2 weeks. And it's fully deserved.
It's been, you know what, it's been a real privilege to come to work every day with all of you lot, and also thanks for being the reason, as well as my family, for getting me through this really weird time. Honestly, it's been a real honour to be here doing this job. It's only 2 weeks. I'll see you on the 20th anyway, and thank you to you, Al, as
thank
always.
You
it's really
Al,
lovely so. To see you.
See you soon,
Mum. Let's end as we should, Taylor, with the birthday bit that wasn't in the episode that was about the birthday, but a different episode entirely. Some people who'd reached 100 and their cakes that they forced breathless old people during COVID with lung problems who aren't supposed to be breathing hard, forced them outside into the street to blow their own 100 candles out on cakes they'd given.
But it's time now to meet some members of a very, very special club. This is the 100 Club, and they're sharing their highs, lows and secrets to a long and happy life.
I mean, I wish I could find it heartwarming. I really do. When they dissolve from a shot of a mocked-up photo album featuring a handsome young buck in army fatigues, it's standing there in sepia in front of the Sphinx, from that to... 100-year-old man reminiscing about his dead wife.
I know. It's the one thing television loves to do is it loves to say, congratulations on getting to 100. Will you tell us about how you met your wife who's been dead for 40 years, and will you please start crying? That's all we want from the 100-year-old people.
And when I saw Marty first dancing, I thought, she's a nice little mover. We had a good marriage, 71 happy years.
Yeah, and that poor sap who's got all his medals on and his old army beret crying into his long white nasal hair about the sheer horror of the years he spent in the army.
But the worst time of my life, I think, was the 5 years I spent in the army.
I felt there were follow-up questions that could have been asked.
Yes!
You can hear the sound of a production assistant going, please don't cry on the cake. It took us ages to light those candles.
I was trying to be calmed and soothed by the sad piano music that they layered over it, but it didn't work.
I do love the fact that whenever you're 100, they always have that thing of going, we're celebrating them, but the music will always say, it is an unbelievable tragedy to live to 100 years old. It really is. There's, whenever they say, you know, what's the secret? That's the other question, isn't it? Not you know, how did you meet your wife and what is the secret to being 100? Whenever they answer, I write it down and I think, whatever it is, I must not do it. Because the idea of being 100 and the last people you've seen in the last 3 months have been the one show making you upset. It's a fate worse than death. They said that 2,300 people had turned 100 during lockdown.
One bright spot of the last few months was the fundraising by Colonel Tom as he approached his 100th birthday. It's a milestone many others have reached over the same period, with more than 2,300 people in the UK celebrating their centenary during lockdown.
2,300 people in lockdown? There are too many old people. They're just too old.
That can't be right.
You know, thus there's a silver lining to COVID all along.
I've had a very happy, good, hard life.
I'm going to mention as well that Betty, who was there, claimed to be 100. There was no way she was 100. She was at oldest, she was like 82. There is absolutely no way I buy she was 100. None at all.
No, I know what you mean. Although they did show a picture of her when she was young, where she did look 100. So time has at least been kind to her. But you're right, when they always say to people of that age, what is the secret of a long... As if they're going to slip you a cheat code or something, you know what I mean? So it's dumb luck. Obviously the answer is dumb luck. These people spent their whole lives on lard, HP sauce, filterless fags and foaming tankards of leaded petrol, and yet here they are, right? Basically, nobody has anything to ask these people with their long, like their full century of life experience, except how can I not die too? And the other one is, what do you regret? They always say, what are your biggest regrets of your long, miserable life? And the one old fella says, well, I've done pretty much all I ever wanted to. There's only one thing I regret, and that's not running a marathon.
I've done pretty well all I wanted to do. There's only one thing I regret, and that's not running a marathon.
Really? Really? It would have been a lot more satisfied if he'd said, well, there's only one thing I regret. I never got to shit in the open mouth of a lady dressed as my father. The hunger never fades, never dies. Born too soon,
and then,
mate.
And then on the one show should have turned around and gone, well, surprise for your 100th, we have arrived.
Due to social distancing, you're going to have to do it in this bucket and we're just going to fling it. I did actually like, there was one thing in there which I thought, again, it was just Jack, his name was. He just said at one point, well, I couldn't see any reason why I shouldn't reach 100.
So I couldn't see any reason why I shouldn't reach 100.
That's the best argument. Good,
really is. He looked sort of slightly angered with time. The idea that time would take him before he was 100.
Betty, what's your regrets? Well, an orgasm would have been nice, but hashtag can't complain. This is not what I needed to see, right? After two episodes of The One Show, where basically the 1990 World Cup, people off Spaced, Jarvis Cocker, Sally Phillips, and someone out of Hearsay were used as warm up acts for a piece about being 100 years old. Right? And I'm sat here greying. Like, I haven't even got started yet. What the fuck? It's like, you can't... This isn't right. It's like, tomorrow I'm going to switch on my Facebook feed and there's going to be an advert like, you know, born between 1970 and 1985, worried you can't pay for your own funeral. And a little picture of Spuggy from Biker Grove looking concerned. You know what I mean? Like Sophie Ellis-Bextor modelling nappies or something. It's like... This is my youth. It's like, fucking hell. What I learnt from this is there's a reason why The One Show's audience is mostly old people. And it's not because the content is particularly relatable for them. It's because watching The One Show makes time feel like it's passing much more slowly. And I think if I get to that age, I'm just going to have it on a loop in the corner of the room and I'm going to feel like I'm 100.
The one thing I learned from this is that bees, this is from the Chris Packham film, bees can see purple stronger than any other colour.
And fragrant lavender soaks up the sun's rays, filling the air with the scent of summer. It's one of my favourites, and it's also great for pollinators, as bees can see the colour purple more clearly than any other colour.
So, I've got some purple paint, and I've gone up to my roof, and I've written the phrase, fuck off bees. That should really, really, that should work. Thanks, guys, appreciate it.
And right there, we will bring part two, and indeed this current series of The One Show Show, to a halt. We will be back after a short summer break, just in time to catch that inevitable second wave of coronavirus. And what's more... there might be exclusive extra bonuses on the way for you, the loyal listener and fellow defowler of the One Show bed. More of that anon. But while we're off, if you haven't already, why not go back and work your way through the back catalogue of the One Show Show podcast, and please do remember to rate and review and tell your friends on social media and so forth. But while you're remembering both of those things, do also remember this and remember it well. When you look at the television to look at the One Show also looks back into you. Goodbye.
Hello, my name is Pete Ellison. This is Dave Cribb.
Hello, and we do a podcast called Friends with Friends, as you might have guessed from the music that's playing underneath, which is a sort of lo-fi rendition of the Friends theme tune for rights reasons. We get a different guest on every week on our podcast to talk about their favourite episode of Friends.
And we look through it in excruciating detail. We pick through levels of plots like no one has ever done before.
So if you like Friends or just listening to people talking, which are both valid activities, do look us up on the old podcast apps and that. Friends with Friends, and we're on Twitter @FriendsWF.